Hello and welcome to Finding Your North Star, the HGKC podcast series where we talk to prominent business people about their experiences and challenges. I'm Kim Jones and I'm delighted to welcome today Andy Bounds, an award-winning consultant who's helped his clients win billions. He has spent decades studying what makes communication work and he's really passionate about it. And he's been helping companies, leaders, and teams communicate much better. Andy is the author of three best-selling books, The Jelly Effect, How to Make Your Communication Stick, The Snowball Effect, Communication Techniques to Make You Unstoppable, and Top Dog, Impress and Influence Everyone You Meet. Welcome, Andy.
Hi there, Kim. Nice to be here.
We read The Snowball Effect and Top Dog during the 2017 book club series from HGKC, and they remain firmly in our top 10 recommendations to our clients. Top Dog is currently being read by our business owners on our bootcamp program, and it's going down really well, I can tell you. I'm looking forward to the top tips that they're coming back with next month to tell us how well they've been doing. We had a great time at our Top Dog book club reading. We've been reading it and you joined us by video for a Q&A and you gave us some great insights. It would be good to get your feedback about what you thought about the event.
It was really nice actually. It's a funny thing writing a book. It's cool and you write it, you're drained when you've written it. Basically you press send to the publishers and then that might be it. You know, and if you're not careful, all you do is you just look at you see it in bookshops, which is very cool, and you see it got up the Amazon charts, which is really cool. But it is you don't really very often get the chance to chat about it. And so I have done a few times, and you know, speaking with your book club was great because, as with any book, it is a generic thing because you're trying to appeal to hundreds of thousands of people. And so for people to read the book and say, "And I have a question about what you said in chapter 12, how that impacts on my business," it was really nice. You know, people had all read it. They already had the questions lined up. So it was great to be there and to share my stuff with them.
Yeah, I still carry mine around, which is lots of fun. And I show people all my little stickers in it for the bits that I use most. So it's a very memorable book and a very easy read, you know, read in a night kind of thing. So it's top tips for the last a lifetime. Thanks.
Cool.
I think it'd be great to tell the listeners how we know each other. Yeah. So we have a friend, don't we? Sarah Owen.
That's right. Yeah. So Super Sarah, love her to bits. She has a wonderful company called Dissimple, which helps people communicate better with each other and so on. I've known Sarah for years and years and years. She's been very important in my journey. You know, she's introduced me to some wonderful people. She's asked me to work with her. I love her to bits, and she obviously put us together, didn't she? So Sarah's one of these people who, when I hear from her, if she asks me to do something, I always just say, "Yep," like whatever it is. I love her a bit, and she's great.
Like you, she has this great passion for helping people be more effective in communication. So now we've established that you've been involved with helping people improve communications for a long time, especially globally, I think, you know, with your clients, and you've covered both public and private sectors, really helping them boost their performance. I think what I'd like to ask is, you know, what is the most common challenge or barrier you see when you're working with leaders of businesses?
So there are a few, but basically it boils down to usually one of two things beginning with I, which is either impress or influence. So people want to be more impressive when they speak. So leaders, how do I impress my stakeholders, my investors, my direct reports, my team, my company, whatever it might be? But then the other eye is influence. It's all very well impressing them, but how do I get people to do what I want? And that might be long-term strategic shift, or it might be just reply to that email I sent you 10 minutes ago. So there are other things, but they're usually the two. How to be more impressive or how to be more influential.
Which ones do you think they struggle with the most?
It could be either, really. I mean, ultimately, with communicate, I always say to people, the most important thing with communication is the word do. So when you communicate, you always want to get people to do stuff afterwards. So if you send an email to someone, probably you want the reader to do something when they've read it. If you send a proposal to someone, well, you want the customer to hit reply and say, yes, let's work together. You know, if you have a meeting, you want there to be actions at the end of it. So the key thing with any communication is it causes the do, causes people to do stuff. Now, that sounds extremely obvious, but a lot of people don't do that. So because you want people to do stuff, the end of an email should end with, please, can you now do X? But very, very often people don't end like that. They say, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to call. So nobody ever does anything. Or they end a meeting with any other business and everyone just keeps talking because that's what any other business means and nobody does anything. It should end with actions arising, but people don't do that. Or they do a presentation and the final slide says, any questions? And that's fine, but really it should say, next steps, please do this. So communication is always supposed to get people to do stuff. And that's the ultimate challenge. So when I'm talking with people about impressing and influencing, they need to be more impressive and or better at influencing ultimately, because they want people to do things differently.
Picking up on that like a really strong behavioural change there, one of the things that I find really interesting is this unlearning bad habits. You know, and you refer to that as kind of a theme across your several of your books. You know, it appears in terms of, you know, the behaviours that we should change.
Sure.
Do you find some habits are harder to change than others?
Yeah, I mean, the whole point about a habit is it's an ingrained behaviour. And we all are creatures of habit. And habits are good things. I mean, basically, the brain it wants to automate everything. The brain doesn't want to wake up every day and say, so how do you clean your teeth again? You know, so your brain seeks to automate. I'm sure you and some people listening to this will have driven home and not remembered the journey home because you just go into automatic pilot. And that's fine because it gets you home safe, and it's fine because cleaning your teeth doesn't cause your brain any hassle. But if you've got in the habit of communicating in a bad way, well, you don't notice it. You don't question it. You just do what you do. So an example might be, I've spoken to some sales teams who've said things like this to me. Andy, we wrote a proposal in 10 minutes flat. And I say, that's amazing. How did you do it so quickly? And they say, oh, we copied last week's. And I say, that's a good idea. So you got last week's, you changed the company logo. And they say, yeah, that's what we did. And I said, okay, that's clever. And you know last week's that you copied? And they go, yes. And I say, did it win the sale? And very often sales teams say, oh, no, it didn't. I said, so let me get this right. Something that didn't work and the customer didn't like it enough to give you any money, you've copied it and done it again? And they go, yes. And if you did another proposal next week, what would you do? They say, we copy it again. And that's the thing. I mean, when you think about it, it is beyond stupid that. Yeah. I mean, it really is. It's beyond stupid. If every time I do this, it really hurts, you would say, stop doing it. Yeah. But if every time you send a proposal, it doesn't work, you don't send the same one. And it happens sometimes. Like, many teams have Monday morning update meetings and everybody hates them. Everybody, even the person who's chairing it. And what will we do next week? Well, we'll just have another one, even though everybody hates it. So we're all creatures of habit. And the trouble with communication is we don't question what we're doing enough. You know, I imagine people's emails that they send today look quite similar to the emails they sent a week ago and a month ago. So we'd never analyze how we do things. Well, my job is to help people see how they to do things differently, but then also to embed the habits so they do things differently. You know, there's no point me saying something that people find great for 2 days and then they forget. You know, they need to be doing it 2 years from now, 2 decades from now. So my job is, number one, to help them see what change to make, and number two, embed it, so then it becomes the new habit.
Yeah, so we're hanging on to these almost bad habits because they're familiar.
Yeah, and we just don't question it.
Yeah,
we just don't question it. I mean, I remember speaking to someone the other day who's struggling with their weight, and as they were talking to me and they were saying they were struggling with their weight, they were in the middle of eating a chocolate bar. And I just thought, I'm not going to point out the irony of this, but I know this person, and I know they tend to have a chocolate bar at 11 o'clock every morning. It's just what they do. So, but that's the thing, like, habits trump logic. Yeah. They trump common sense. We're just not aware that we do them. And, you know, a really good exercise to do, you know, for people listening to this, I mean, a simple one. I just said before, emails should always end with, please, can you do this? So if you're listening to this, just have a look at your sent items. Look at your last five emails you've sent and look at the bottom line of each one. Does it say to the reader, please, can you do this? Or does it say to the reader, if you've got any questions, let me know? And you have to do things like that, Kim, because if you don't check what you're doing, yeah, you're not even aware what you're doing. You're just doing what you did last week, which might or might not be good.
And do you think people are more reluctant to ask questions and to challenge because they feel that it's too challenging? If I'm saying to somebody, oh, I don't want you to do it like this, I want to do it like that, or we don't go that next step and ask.
Yeah, they can be. I mean, it depends a bit on the personality and their position in the company and all that sort of stuff. But sometimes people can feel it's a sign of weakness to change. You know, sometimes people think it's a sign of weakness. So, for example, when I write proposals for clients, I always say to them, different people want different things in their proposals. So can you tell me what headings you want in yours? And when I tell people that, quite often they go, well, don't your clients ever think that's a sign of weakness? You ought to know what goes in your proposal. And say, no, not at all, because I say different people want different things. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you want. So I don't think it's a weakness. I think it's a strength. So every proposal I've ever written has told the client exactly what they want. Because when the client says, oh, just include X, Y, Z, well, I just include X, Y, Z for my proposal's that long and everybody else's proposal's that long.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this fear of asking questions because either we think it might be contentious or it's a sign of weakness, it's just worth reflecting. Are you not asking questions because it actually is a sign of weakness? Or are you not asking questions because you're in the habit of not asking questions? So therefore, your brain convinces itself questions are bad.
Yeah. You talked there about a couple of things that you call afters, which I absolutely love. And it'd be great to tell our listeners about that. You know, the please, can you do this? So that's an after, you know, and yeah, the proposal is an after. And I found this really a powerful way of working with my clients. Tell us a little bit more about how you package that up and get people to understand
okay,
be effective.
So what we mean by afters is why is the other person better off afterwards? And the reason I talk about this a lot is whatever service you think you do to your clients, whatever product you sell, whatever service you sell is actually not what clients buy. So if I work with sales teams, they're not buying my advice, my proposal templates, my coaching. What they're buying is after me, their sales go up. So they don't want me, they want the afters of me. If I go and see a lawyer, I don't want to see her, really. But after seeing her, I'm not going to jail.
Yeah.
I might see an accountant. I don't want an accountant, but after seeing him, I'm not paying as much tax, hopefully legally, or I'll need the solicitor again. So we all think that we do stuff and clients buy the stuff we do, and it's just not right. You might think you're in marketing. You're not in marketing. You're in helping your clients grow the business and get more leads. You might think you're in IT. You're not in IT. You're helping companies run more smoothly and more quickly so the business owner can go home and see the kids. So you might think you're a coach. You're not. You're helping people achieve what they want from their life. But the thing is, if someone said, sell me, you'd say, I'm a coach. I've won awards. I've got these certificates. I don't care about your past. I care about my future. So the point with afters is always to remember that when we're communicating with other people, we focus on the future good. In other words, why people will be better off afterwards, what they'll be doing afterwards. And again, I mean, I keep talking about proposals. They're not the only communication you do. But here's a simple one. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they wanted their conversion rate to go up from 20% to 30%. So the only thing they wanted was a conversion rate of 30%. So after me, they want 30% conversion. So therefore, I called my proposal ensuring you have a conversion rate of 30%.
Yeah.
I didn't call it Andy Bounds proposal. I didn't call it cutting edge training program. I didn't call it coaching and mentoring. What I called it is why they'll be better off afterwards, because that's all the other person wants.
Yeah. And, you know, it's very easy to see when we talk about it in a proposal or a, you know, a tangible sort of thing. But being this more outcome focused, when we think about that in terms of our approach as leaders in being better communicators.
Yeah.
You know, how does this shift help us do that in a less tangible way?
Okay, great question. So so let's have a look at a leader. You know, when people talk about their elevator pitch, how you describe yourself in a sentence. Well, anytime I speak to a leader, if I say, "What's your job?" quite often they say either "I'm a leader," or they say, "Well, I'm the group managing director." So they use the job title in effect. So they say what they are. Or what they do is they talk about what they do. "Well, I'm in charge of leading the Asian team." So, and I could ask anyone that. If I said to an accountant, they will either say what they are, "I'm an accountant," or they say what they do, "I complete tax returns." So, you know, if I was to ask a coach, "What do? They either say, "Well, I'm a coach," or they say, "I coach my clients." So every single person thinks of themselves by what they are or what they do. And I say to people, don't think of yourself like that. You have to think of yourself as an afters causing thing. So it's not what you do that matters, it's what you cause that matters. So you might think your job is to be an accountant. It's not. It's to cause your clients to pay less tax.
Yeah.
And you might think you're a leader, but it's not. It's to give your team the job of their dreams. It's to give your team what they need to progress as individuals, as people. It's to give your company the chance to achieve its goals. So your job as a leader is not to be "I am X" or "I do Y." It's "I am to cause Z." So any leaders who are listening to this, just humor me and just think about, why are you better off after you've done this? Why are people better off after you've done your work? So how does it help your team? How does it help your stakeholder? How does it help your business? So one quick example, Kim, I worked with a pharmaceutical company recently, and I said to the leaders, "Let's just go around the table very quickly. Tell me what your job is, just so I understand what your role is here." And every single one said, "I'm a leader. I run this division. I'm the finance guy. You know, I'm the CMO. I'm the this, I'm the this." And they just told me what they are or what they did. And I said, "Do you know what's really interesting? There are 22 people in the room. You are the senior people in a pharmaceutical company. You have all told me what you did, but not one of you has mentioned the word patience." And there was total silence in the room. And I said, "I thought this pharmaceutical company was supposed to actually make patients better or improve patient lives or do something. Have I misunderstood something? Did none of you have any impact on patients' lives?" And they went, "Oh yes, well, of course you do." I said, "But none of you said it." Yeah. None of you said it. And if I was a member of your team and said, "What's the purpose of our team?" would you have said the word patience? Now, I'm not saying you should say the word patience. You think what word you need to say. But if I work for your team, I wouldn't have clarity on our purpose. I would know you were the leader because you told me your job title. And I know that I am the account manager because you gave me my job title. But I don't know what the purpose, I don't know what the afters are. I don't know what we're looking to cause. So it doesn't matter whether you're writing a proposal to try and win the business or you're a leader who are trying to win the direction of your team. You have to point out the afters, where we're going afterwards, why people are better off afterwards.
Yeah. That's really interesting in the way you talk about it, because I'm really interested to explore your approach, because you're quite different and very innovative in the way you take these sort of communications and also quite often in the sales kind of environment, methodologies and interpreting different. So it would be really useful to give our listeners some insight about how you go around doing that, because it would give them a little bit more insight into
Right. So how I do this is, as the listeners are going to not be surprised, I'm an afters causing thing. So I always start with the afters. So when someone says, "Andy, we think we might want a training course with you," training is the thing I do. But the afters are why they're better off. But I also do coaching. I also do writing. I also do conference speaking. I also do communication creation. So when someone says they want a training course, I'm always thinking, well, you might not actually. We need to find your afters first. So my first step always is to find their afters. So I say, okay, well, obviously I do training, but can I ask some questions so I understand what you want? And they say, what do you want to know? I say, well, like, you say you want training. Why? What are you looking to cause? After it. you know, what's your end game here? What are you looking to achieve? And I might do this if I'm selling, but I'd do the same if I'm coaching. If I was talking to somebody, I would say, what are you looking to achieve here? What would make your life better? So I always start with the afters. And I have a load of questions I've come up with over the years, but they're not very clever. It's like, you know, what do you want to achieve? And how will you know you've achieved it? And why is it important to you that you do? And would you have more fun if you did? You know, and all that sort of stuff. So I have these questions. So step one, find the afters. And then step two, I then work backwards with the client and say, so let's have a look if we can build a program together that will ensure you achieve that as quickly as possible. Now, I gave you some examples then, Kim, of what some of my deliverables are: coaching, mentoring, training, conference speaking, writing stuff, whatever it might be. So I don't go in hoping they want training. I go in hoping I find out what the afters are. Because once I find the afters, I work back and say, look, well, these are the different deliverables. Like, which do you think will get you there? And then what we do is we get a piece of paper, the client and I, and we both have a pen because I'm old, so I don't tend to use things like iPads and so on. So we both have a pen and we sketch out a timeline. So let's say we agree it's going to be a 3-month program. So across the top, we do an arrow and put 1, 2, 3. And then I have a line that says Andy, and then I have a line that says Kim or whatever the client's name is. And we write down what we could both do. So we almost sketch this thing out. And it's cool because it's co-creation. Yeah. So they're very committed to it. And sometimes we look at it and say, does that look right to you? I'll tell you what, let's swap pens. Do you want to rewrite my? And so it's co-creating. And then when we finish that, I then basically close the sale or do the influencing piece. And I generally will ask a question like, well, does that look good to you? And if they say yes, I say, so how soon do you want it then? And then we close it. So that's the long version. Now let me give you the super short version. It's what I call ABC. Okay. ABC. So the A, I find the afters. So that's what I said to start with. Ask questions, find the afters. And don't let the client get away without telling you afters. Find the afters. And if you're a leader, find your team's afters, where they want to be at the end of the year. All right? Ask questions. Don't let them get off until you find the afters. A is afters. B, you then build certainty. So in my case, that's the timeline. Other people might use case studies. Other people might talk about their cutting edge coaching technique or whatever it is. Okay. So find the afters with questions, build certainty, and then see you close it off. So you close it off with questions like, how soon do you want to do this? Is there any reason we can't just get going now? When's a good time for you? Would you prefer to do X or Y? So basically, I've given you quite a long rant here, Kim. I hope this is useful and interesting, but you can, you can boil it down in ABC. Yeah. A, find afters. B, build certainty. C, close it off. If you're a leader and you're talking to your team, find where they want to be afterwards. Then build the journey together and then close it off by saying, so let's agree everyone's actions and we crack on.
That's great. That's really useful. I shall be following your ABC from now on a bit more. I think the route there of asking more questions, you know, we're very reluctant in relationships to at work to ask lots of questions. Mm-hmm. You know, we think we're there to listen all the time, but you can't necessarily listen unless you've asked a good question to then listen to the response.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you might be listening to
quite
something.
Often. Yeah,
yeah, you might be listening to something rubbish. Yeah. So I had someone the other day who said they wanted some cold calling training, and so I could have just said, "Okay, let's get diaries out." But I said, "Why do you want that?" And he goes, "Well, we're not very good at cold calling." I said, "How do you know?" He said, "Well, everyone's diary's empty. We're not seeing enough customers." I said, "So do you want more leads then?" And he goes, "Yeah." I said, "How would you measure that?" He goes, "Well, everyone's diaries will be full." And I said, and do you want them in here on the phone or do you want them out there meeting people? He goes, I want them out there meeting people. So I was thinking, so it doesn't sound like you want cold calling then. I said, right, okay, so if we could somehow get them out there meeting people, would you think that had been a good use of our time? And he goes, yes, that would be brilliant. And I said, okay, and if I can get them out there meeting people, maybe without having to resort to cold calling, how would that be? And he goes, oh, that would be brilliant. We all hate cold calling. I went, what? You wanted the training course on something you hate? I mean, we could do a training course on how to murder sweet animals if you want. You'll hate that too. I mean, and so because I asked good questions, what I ended up with, he thought he wanted cold calling training, and it ended up what he wanted was a 1-month program, which will get everyone's diaries full. Mm. And so then it becomes a totally different thing. So If I was going to give anyone one piece of advice from listening to this, it would be the exercise I said before. Look at your 10 last sent items. See if you do call to action. Because if you don't do it in emails, you probably don't do it anywhere. So that's life-changing to know that. Not very sexy, but it's dead important. The second piece of advice I'd give to anyone would be prepare questions. Prepare questions. So important, I'm going to say it again. Prepare questions. So when you're going into a meeting with someone, prepare good questions you're going to ask. As you say before, Kim, we know we're supposed to listen, but you might be listening to rubbish if you ask rubbish questions. So prepare good questions. No one cares now that I did this once, but about 10, 15 years ago, I sat down with a pint of my favourite drink, which was good because it was gin. No, sorry. So I had a pint of beer in my hand. I had a pen and a piece of paper. And I set myself a challenge. I had to write 20 brilliant questions. And I thought, I'm just going to sit here till I've done it. And I wrote these 20 questions down. And then I found someone I trusted. And I tried all 20 out on them. Half of them weren't very good. So I had to get another pint of beer and replace those 10. And then I found someone else. And I did this over a period of a couple of weeks. And by the end of the couple of weeks, I had these questions. Mm. And I still refer to them now. I mean, I fine-tune them over the years, of course, as my personality changes and all that sort of stuff. But what I found was that I found this the most empowering thing I could do. Yeah. So when people go and engage their teams or engage new customers or engage suppliers or engage whatever, very often the first thing they do is they prepare material. I go, why are you doing that? If you prepare material, you're just preparing to talk at people. Don't prepare material, prepare questions. Because if you prepare questions, they will talk.
I agree. We do exactly the same thing. We have our kind of, you know, questions as approach. You've talked a lot of that about sort of the tips and things that you have, and you've got some great resources that can help people. So would you like to point people to some of the great things that you do to help businesses be more and leaders be more useful?
Yeah. The most popular one, I think, is my online videos. So my name's Andy Bounds. So if you go to andybounsonline.com, I've got 140 videos. So there's some on things like influencing, how to impress, how to ask good questions. One of the videos is my favorite 10 questions. Everyone just seems to go to that because it saves them having to drink their own pint of beer. Also on LinkedIn. So just search me on LinkedIn. I post stuff most days on LinkedIn. So people are very welcome
to that. Tuesday tip. I love your Tuesday tip. I absolutely look forward to that every Tuesday.
Oh, thank you.
Pass on a lot to people. I'm always forwarding it to people because it's amazing what comes in every week.
Good, thank you. Yeah, so the Tuesday tips. So my website, so my videos are andybounsonline.com, but my normal website without the videos is just Andy Bounds. So if you go to andybounds.com/tips, T-I-P-S, that's where you can sign up for those. And as you say, Kim, the nice thing about those is you don't have to go to a website to look at the videos. You just wake up and it comes in on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
You might like to try this today. One of the reasons I started doing that, I mean, to be brutally honest, sometimes on a Monday, I think, what am I going to say? But I'm really pleased I do it because what it does is, as I said before, we're looking to change people's habits. Yeah. And habits are long-term things. And I've been doing these every Tuesday since June 2010. So what that means is it just helps people change habits. Any new company I work with, I say, get your team to sign up to this because I'm going tomorrow, but they'll get these tips every Tuesday for until I can't think of anything else to say, and that doesn't seem to be happening yet. And so it just helps people with this regular reminder, you're supposed to be doing this.
That's a great, really useful place too. I think come the end of our conversation, we've told people where to go to get better at being good communicators. So it just remains to me to say thank you, Andy. It's always a real pleasure to speak to you. And I'm going to give a shout out again for your books because they should all be getting over to Amazon and getting a good copy of The Snowball Effect, The Jelly Effect and Top Dog. And don't forget to leave a review, listeners, because that's helped everyone else as well. So thanks very much. And if you'd like to know more about our podcasts and about HUKC, then get in touch and go read about Finding Your North Star. Thanks very much for listening and bye for now. And thank you, Andy.
Cool. You're welcome.
Okay. Bye for now.